to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return. I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Low and unpaid stacks and jacks. Somehow he just went whatever on the board. SP futures up 27.75. Dow futures up 257. NASDAQ futures up 96. This is after a big day yesterday that we've made back pretty much everything we lost on Tuesday. So... But now, of course, U.S. and China agree to meet in October. Manny, how many times are we doing this? The bounce on the meeting, the alleged meeting.
It's a good question. I'm not doing anything, so I couldn't tell you. But some people, which make up this market, react to every single piece of quote-unquote news, and this is what happens.
Well, I think that without question... The economy is slowing, whether it's because of the tariffs or coincidental with the tariffs or the tariffs are just making it worse. You know, I challenge anybody to know that, but there's no question we've got some slowing. And if all of a sudden, that whole thing was resolved, if trade improved, I will say this, the idea that everything will be back to normal in 2 weeks, I think is amazingly naive, but there's no doubt things would be better if we were moving back toward that way. Some resolution of some kind would be a good thing, and if the tariffs went down instead of up. But the idea that people haven't found new markets and some people haven't been hurt enough to be out of the business and new people in the business maybe, or even more consolidation than we've seen in industries now, I mean, the damage is somewhat being done. I mean... It's just, that's sort of the way that it is. I don't know how anybody can anticipate the recovery period, what the real numbers are in China in terms of how bad they're doing. I don't think anybody knows. And I'm not so sure people want to see the real numbers here, and I don't know that we have them to talk about them. So the idea that I was listening yesterday, there was a thing on CNBC, Dr. J and Pete ran it, and to say that there's unusual thoughts about the market back and forth is, dramatic, and there's way too much. If the Fed would just do what we want them to do, everything will be okay. There's enough money in the system now, so I don't see that as a... But clearly, if Professor Goodhart was on this morning, he would probably say that the market now has become something other than what should be. It's not just a pricing mechanism. It's not just a way to sell stocks after IPOs so people won't mind being investors. That's what the market was designed to do. Now it's like everybody's... political sounding board. It's everybody's, yardstick. It's everything. And I don't know that it ever was designed to do that. And so they had a whole crew of people on there going around the table basically talking about what we talk about every morning, which is, one person, you have to stay long because there's no place else to put it. And then Morgan Stanley or somebody came out, it was one of the banks. It was either Citigroup, must have been Citigroup. Citigroup came out and said, we think people should lighten up. And, of course, everybody was roundly, bashing them on the head and shoulders about being, such weenies, and why don't they realize that the Fed's going to lower and the market's going higher and blah, blah, and we're going to eventually talk to China and Trump's going to get a deal. It is definitely a tale of two worlds, economy and somebody would mention that. We're talking about the market. The economy is slowing, and everybody keeps talking about how the – Then you have the inevitable, profits were better than expectations. Who cares? Who are these expectators? I mean, are they going up? Are they going down? Are they enough? The problem is, it is, like we talk about a lot, it's extremely difficult to value income streams at the extremes. And I've seen it now both ways. I mean, when you back in 1980, 81, and people think, what are you going back that far for? Interest rates were the other way. Interest rates were, they were, if you could get 15.5 if you hustled and got a year CD or whatever the hell you could get, it's Continental or First National or someplace, or you could probably get 12.5 going out, 5 or 10 or 30 years, which were big numbers. That was inverted, right? Because further out you went, the less it got. Because people had a feeling, I mean, intelligent people had a feeling that they couldn't stay like this. Because if they did, we'd have real problems. So somehow, somewhere along the line, there's got to be a fix. So how did you value a company that was trading for, you know, $30 and making $250? You'd sit there and say, well, I don't want this thing. I can go get free money, better than that. Yet, there is a value to it. Okay. There's a value to it in the sense that that company can grow, and the interest rates that you're getting in your CD probably at some day we're only going to go the other way. So maybe you had to sort of judge, okay, if I know I can go to a bank and get, pick a number, 14-15%. Or I can buy this stock. All the stocks have done in the last 10 years has gone straight down. I can buy this stock and I can make, you know, whatever, 6%, 7%, 8%, maybe even 9%. Why the hell would I do that when I can go? But clearly the risk was in the turn. And, you know, interest rates, you know, probably weren't going to 30. If they did, we would have had one hell of a no economy, and I think things would have imploded. And this company, if all of a sudden this massive recession we had over top of everybody's heads, if a company's good enough to be making $250 a year now, if things ever got a little bit better, they're probably going to be making 4 or 5, because surely it would be easier for them as well. Because now these guys are paying, you know, for the money they're borrowing, they're paying, you know, 12, 13, 14, 15%. So, I mean, they were in a world of hurt. So if they were still making money, you had to judge yourself, okay, these guys, if anything good ever happened, these guys are going to be worth one hell of a lot more. The reason why I'm going through this is we're on the mirror image side of this. We're at, well, hey, this company's sending you a $2 a year dividend. You can't get squat in the bank. You better pay $500 for the stock. Okay. Now, if you put it in a calculation model, just like in 1981, that somewhat makes sense. But the risk is in the turn. I mean, when are interest rates, if ever, going to go back to where they're, I'm going to say, somewhat normal, to where your risk-free rate is going to be 2, 2.5, 3%. It probably is going to be someday. Now, the question is, what's this stock going to be worth at the turn? So it's not just a static analysis. It's what do you see going forward? Now, the solution, when you get down interest rates at 2, 1.5%, well, are we really going to drive them negative? And where in history has it said, A, has there been negative rates, and B, that they've done anybody any good? When the places that have had negative interest rates, Japan and Germany, it clearly doesn't look like they've done anybody any good. Now, you can always make the call that it could have been better. I mean, they would always be worse. Matter of fact, they had a former Fed governor from the Minnesota region. Some lady was on yesterday. And all she did, and she could have used four arms, all she did was pat herself on the back about the abuse they took when they did the what do you call it? When they went out and bought other assets other than the QE3. When they bought other assets they bought mortgages and things instead of just bonds, which is in their charter, which is in the law. So they went out and bought all the other stuff. And she was like, people gave us basically crap about that, and look how it turned out. Well, I don't know, man. How did it turn out? I mean, there's an absolute fait accompli that it was a genius move and it saved the world. I don't know where it's written that it did anything like that. I mean, do you? I mean, I want to be in a position where I can be the student and the grader. I mean, does anybody know whether? I'm not saying it was a horrible idea. I'm not saying it was a great idea. I don't know how anybody knows. They went out and bought a bunch of crap. They still got it. Okay, the economy never went to 4%. It never caught fire on its own. People who sold them the stuff did okay. Okay, the banks, if they bought them for more than they were worth, those people did fine. They saved the banks. All right, fine. Okay, and they didn't save anybody in the house. Okay, that sucks. So one part's good, one part, I mean, I don't know. Would you say that was a resounding success, or how could you tell?
Well, it clearly wasn't a resounding success.
They're telling you it is. How do you debate them?
I don't know. I mean, it's hard. It's one of those things where you remember how bad it was in 07 and 08.
Well, this didn't come till later. This was like,
it's all been part of a big plan, 5-year, 10-year plan post 07-08. I don't know if it's, like you said, I don't know if it's a direct correlation or if it's made things worse or if it's made things better or if it's had zero effect at all. I don't know.
Well, I mean, I think you did QE3 because QE1 and QE2 didn't work. Right?
But maybe you needed three all along. I don't know.
It could be. I'm not going to sit on a stage with her and say, you guys really screwed up. But I'm going to say, where's the obvious?
That's the thing. There's no obvious, you know, huge success that you can point to.
Right. I mean, you can think of this about all kinds of. If I hadn't done this, things would have been worse. How do we know? How do you know? You know, I'm just saying. I know it did some discontinuities. All of a sudden, I know banks made out better, right?
Because we know that. They were going under.
Well, no, this was QE3 now. Remember we did the one and the two?
Yeah.
Now, I'm not so sure three was even needed. But obviously one and two were not rousing successes, or you wouldn't have needed three. So they go buy all this stuff, and okay, there you go. Now you've got it, and now it's running off the thing, and I don't know. Well, you just shoved a whole bunch of money in the system, but I didn't see any catching fire where all of a sudden people were able to go get loans individually and credit card rates went down to 10. I don't see anything that affected anybody I know from there. Nobody got any, nobody who was getting foreclosed on, didn't get foreclosed on. And so afterward they bought the mortgage from the bank for, more than it was worth. That's a good thing for us. I don't know. I guess it's a good thing for them. But it's their story and they're sticking to it. You know, they remember the stupid story that I tell once in a while about the elephant getting the guys painting the elephant's toenails pink in the zoo? And they said, what are you doing that for? He says, well, because so when they break out of here, we can catch them. Because we see them at night running with the pink toenails before they get to the loop. I said, I've never seen an elephant in a loop. See how well it's working? I mean, it is nice to judge yourself. You know, I mean, what did Alan Greenspan give himself an A over for his tenure? I'm going to say the guy did the worst job possible with all the different, we're going to pour money into the system. Oh, no, that's a bad idea. Let's pour it back out. Y2K, let's pour it in because the whole place is going to go down. We need all this money in the system. Then we drag it out 3 months afterward, and then the market crashes. I don't see how the guy, you know, I'm gonna put him at a D or something. I don't know. But how can anybody really judge? How can you say if he didn't do this, it would have been worse or not? But if you let other people judge, but then again, what is it? History, the victor's right to history, Manny, or something along those lines?
Always.
So, hey, what's going on with tonight? We got to talk about it finally. Football. Who you've been in your fantasy draft? You're all caught up. What's the deal? Who's going somewhere? What about? The Bears, I think, are better than last year, but the schedule is 10 times worse. Plus the two. How does the schedule work? Everybody in their division plays the same division in the AFC, correct? And the same division other NFC.
And correct.
Then
the rest is based on your finish last year.
Well, there's two other games. Once you get done with your division, the other division in the AFC, the other division in the NFC, it leaves you two, I'll use the term, wild card games.
Right. So this year, the NFC North is playing against the AFC West and the NFC East. So, you know, the Bears play the Broncos, you know, they play the Raiders, they play the Chargers.
But that's okay because Green Bay, Detroit, and Minnesota play all the same teams.
And they play the Chiefs, correct. So that's okay. And then they play the NFC East as well. So they play the Giants and you know, the Cowboys and the rest of the NFC East. The difference between the Bears being in first place last year and the Lions is the Bears have to play good teams that were good last year anyway. It doesn't mean they're going to be good this year, but
the remaining two games, right?
Well, so the Bears, it's the Saints, which is going to be tough, even though that's at home. And they play at the Rams, who were in the Super Bowl last year. So yeah, it's just the two games. So you play your six division games, and then you play eight division games that the rest of your division plays, which this year is the AFC West and the NFC East, and then you play two games based on last year's schedule. So the Bears have a first place schedule. So they play two teams that were in first place last year.
Which means those will probably be national TV games.
Yeah, so they play the Saints at Soldier Field. That's the 3:25 national TV Fox game.
So the Saints don't usually win outside away from home, but still they're tough.
And then they play at the Rams, which is Sunday Night Football in November.
What about the Vegas guys? Do they have a real stadium, or are they still playing in a soccer stadium?
They're not playing, as far as I know. Their stadium's not going to be ready this year. I know that they're still in Oakland.
Who are the guys that were playing in? The Chargers?
The Chargers played in the soccer stadium. I think they're playing in the soccer stadium again because I think the it's going to be 2020 season before they move into the new stadium.
Are they eventually going to share the new stadium with the Rams?
I'm not sure about that. I'll have to look into that. You might be right. Yeah, I'll have to look into that.
Because they were because
the Rams are still playing at the Coliseum, USC.
But the Rams were able to sell all the seat licenses for the new stadium, and I don't think the Chargers were. It was like the Giants and the Jets in a new stadium in the Meadowlands.
Right.
The Giants were able to sell all their seat licenses, and the Jets weren't, or had trouble.
Yeah. And it's the L.A. thing's an interesting dynamic because, obviously, the Rams were in L.A. for a long, long, long time and probably still had some semblance of a fan base that either used to like them or even followed them when they went to St. Louis. So they came back, and it was very easy for them to kind of reacclimate to that fan base. Not easy, but definitely there was some sort of foundation. The Chargers were in San Diego, and San Diego people are pissed that they moved to L.A., and they're like, screw the Chargers.
Yeah.
And the L.A. people don't care about the Chargers. And so even though the Chargers
have... Have they made any attempt to get them back?
That I don't know.
I mean, the soccer stadium, they did spruce up the soccer stadium. I mean, you know, they can, you can spruce up a stadium pretty well. I mean, for a long time, the 49ers played at Kezar Stadium. If you ever get, next time you go to Frisco, if you get, you know, I know you're always doing, working with the shows and everything, but if you ever get a minute, drive by it. It looks like a high school stadium. Because I think they put all kinds of temporary stands for when the 49ers were there. I mean, there was a skybox or anything like that. So, it's in this big park that you can expand on, but the soccer stadium, I saw it late in the year last year. It almost looked like a regular stadium. I mean, it wasn't that big, but you know what I'm saying? They put all kinds of seats around it, so it probably held 40,000 people. It wasn't like it was 10.
So the new stadium being built in L.A. is currently called Los Angeles Stadium at Hollywood Park.
What the hell is that?
And I'm looking for the address here. It broke ground November 17th, 2016. It's scheduled to open at the start of the 2020 season. The Rams and the Chargers will share the stadium. It looks like... I'm trying to find the address, but for some reason I can't find the address. It doesn't really, it just says it's in Inglewood, but I can't find the street address. The capacity is 70,240, expandable to 100,240 for the Super Bowl.
How do you do that? Just have big areas where you let people in?
That's a good question. It's going to have the fake grass like they have in Green Bay.
What exactly is that?
The fake grass? Same thing Notre Dame has.
I think Green Bay, it's a combination of fake grass and real grass.
Isn't that what Notre Dame has?
No, they turned it down.
I don't know the difference.
Stuff at Green Bay is a lot better, allegedly. Yeah. Allegedly, I don't, you know.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Because I think it is actually mostly real grass. I could be wrong on that, but it's some combination of the two. But the other stuff, Notre Dame's got the stuff with the crushed rubber in it. That's like in the Dallas Stadium and all those other places.
I'm looking into the Packers turf here.
It's a different name. There's not going to be many places with grass really left. I mean, I don't think two teams can play and have it grass. The Coliseum's still grass, though, right? And UCLA plays there, I believe.
Yeah, Lambeau Field is, let's see here.
I think it's the only one that's like that.
This is in 2018. The organization recently completed a 5-month reconstruction of Lambeau Field's turf, transitioning from the Grassmaster polypropylene fibers it installed before the 07 season to polyethylene-based SIS grass. Lambeau is the first SIS grass field in the United States. The technology has grown in popularity on soccer fields, however, throughout the world.
So what is it?
The previous 3 to 4 week timetable to stitch the field, a single machine shipped from Japan worked around the clock from July 9th through 16th. It stitched fibers 3/4 inch from each other and 7 inches deep, sticking up just under an inch above the ground. Synthetic fibers are intended to provide a safe stabilization for the sand underneath the field, preventing the ground from getting pushed around and becoming uneven.
So they're not real?
No.
Okay. I thought they were some combination of the both, but they're not. Obviously.
Yeah, I don't even know how you do a combination.
Well, that's why I thought it was pretty neat. How'd you even do it? But there can't be too many grass left. I mean, just
so they have, it sounds to me, a much more state-of-the-art turf than anyone else right now. at least in the U.S.
Well, the other stuff...
I don't know if it's better or not, but...
Well, the idea with the soccer is you want the ball to roll like it is on grass.
Right.
So what they... I think they use the crush rubber part for that, right? Because when the ball lands, you still see dust come up and everything. But that's... I think some people are pissed at the... don't you end up... If you breathe the stuff, they've had people with lung problems. That was a big issue for a while. Kids have played their whole life on that stuff where they were getting some lung problems or whatever. Really? It is, you know, pulverized rubber that you are inhaling if you're landing on the ground and it comes up.
I mean, it does sound like they're putting this synthetic fiber into a Kentucky bluegrass field.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's what I'm saying.
I mean, I guess there's probably some real grass, but I don't... Is that any different than what anyone else does? I don't know.
Well, the other stuff... No, the other stuff is all... You ever seen one of those fields? First time I went on one, a park district had one. When nobody was looking, I reached down to see there wasn't grass. It looked just like grass. It feels just like grass. This is with the pulverized rubber in it.
Yeah.
I was at the... I did my tour of the stadium in Dallas. They must be going to have a rodeo or something. Not a rodeo, a car demolition thing or some crap they have in there. Well, they were taking the field up. And underneath it is just pure concrete. And they take up rows that are, like, I'm going to say, 10 feet wide, 5 yards wide. And there's this machine. It's kind of a half-assed forklift truck that goes way up in the air and holds the grass. Then there's a thing behind it that beats the crap out of it and basically shakes it like you're shaking a rug. And they shake all the rubber stuff out. And every 5 yards, there's like three of these machines, and they're doing this. This is a huge operation to take the feel up because of all the... You can't just roll it up because you got all the rubber in it. So every spot they're doing this, for every 5 yards of the field, there's like a it looks like a dump truck full of this crushed rubber. It looks like dirt. So, I mean, there's a lot of it in there. I mean, every 5 or 7 yards, there's like the equivalent of like a dump truck load of it. It's probably, an inch or two deep on the bottom. I mean, it's a big deal. I don't know how you put it all back down again. I mean, you must have to sew those things together, don't you think? I mean, they can't just go sliding.
Yeah, obviously, yeah, they couldn't go sliding. I don't know how they do it.
And then somehow you dump all the stuff back on there and work it in the grass. You can't just leave it on top. It's a big deal. What are the stadiums where they pull the grass in and out? Because they do soccer. Don't they do that up at Detroit? They have two fields, and they just wheel them in.
Yeah, because Detroit's got the dome. And they're playing on... I mean, it's not the old AstroTurf, but it's not anything like the fake grass in Green Bay.
I thought they had real grass, that they just brought the field in, because didn't they get the World Cup because they had that?
I don't know.
They had something.
I'm trying to envision what it's like at Ford Field.
Gave up on grass down in Phoenix.
Yeah, they had the retractable roof, and they couldn't get the grass to grow, even with the retractable roof.
It's because it was a whole way up there. It was a crummy stadium. That's a crummy stadium, I think.
I've never been to that one. Their baseball stadium is horrendous, in my opinion.
It's hot in there.
Yeah, and it's dumpy.
I was in the baseball stadium. That's one I didn't like.
Yeah, the football stadium supposedly is really nice there, but I've never been to it.
I thought they went there. They couldn't grow grass in the baseball stadium.
That might be true too. I don't remember them ever trying to grow grass in the baseball stadium, but maybe they did. But I know for a fact they tried to in the football stadium, and they just couldn't get it to grow. So they went to some sort of synthetic field too.
S&P futures up 25, Dow futures up 239, NASDAQ futures up 86. So we're not quite as high as we were when we walked in, but still we're talking 50 points from the Tuesday low. So where we are today is where we're up for the week. So if we hang here, we're going to be up on the week this much. I'm Tom Howie, Mr. Matt Weber. I'll be right back. Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right
now. Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. He's Mr. Webber on the board. S&P futures up 25. NASDAQ futures up 86. We were up 28, but we're pretty much holding up near the top here. Dow futures up 247, so I guess it's like we're starting the week out because we were down Tuesday, we were up yesterday, now we're up again. Obviously, this is because China and U.S. agreed to meet in October for trade negotiations, so we're going to run all the way up to October until all of a sudden those don't pan out, then we go back down again or something. I mean, this is kind of getting a little bit bizarre, but it's hanging in there. It's still ruling the market on a daily basis for sure. DAX up 95.8. FTSE, these guys are in a world of hurt over here. This, with the votes in Parliament yesterday that this guy now has really no ability for a no-deal Brexit because he lost that vote. He's been in there 3 days and he's already seeming like he's drowning, but we'll see. So the FTSE's down 42.6%. CAC Iran up 53. That's 1%. Over in Asia, we see rallies here for sure. Nikkei up 436. It's up 2%. Shanghai up 28. They're up 1%. Hang Seng down 7. Don't forget those guys were up like 400 and some the day before on the deal in Hong Kong, at least to pull that one of the protesters' demands off the table. Bonds, we've got, they're up 1.51, so we're back over 1.51, 1.5 on the 10-year. The Bund is minus 0.61, so they top. They lowered down at like 0.74 or something. They've actually come back a little bit towards even. Japan 0.26, they went down as much as 0.29, so we're seeing a little upward progress on interest rates. Oil down 19 cents, 56.07. Brent up a penny, and gold's taking a hit today, down 10 bucks, 15.50. Same thing with silver, down 20 cents, because they've been running way up, but now with the market. Copper as well, and I actually tried to do a little bit of stuff yesterday in some of these copper stocks, because it looks to me like copper's come off the bottom a little bit. It got down to 252, and it's up to 262. It might just be a dead clap bounce, who knows. But I was sniffing around yesterday. I'm still sniffing, but I didn't really just buy anything, but I'm looking in that direction. Maddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Chief sniffing dead cats, it sounded like.
Yep.
Good morning to everyone out there. A couple of issues already to report. Kennedy inbound just before Cumberland. We have a crash blocking the right lane, and this has the Kennedy slowing down as you're heading on the inbound side. So keep that in mind out in the northwest suburbs. It's not affected the Edens, and as you're closer further downtown, the Kennedy's still moving okay. Eisenhower, we have a crash on the outbound side blocking the right lane just before Wolf Road out past Forest Park. Out in the near west suburbs, but the inbound side's looking okay. Traffic's starting to build, but no accidents or issues to report. Stevenson, normal traffic volumes increasing around Cicero, but no accidents in either direction. Southside expressways are looking good. Only other issue in the area is downtown Wabash at Madison. There is a crash. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today, it's going to be a beautiful day here in Chicagoland and a beautiful, nice night for the Bears season opener. Partly cloudy skies, a high of 71. Right now it's mostly cloudy and 61 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 108 today. Right now it's mostly clear and 89. In sports, the NFL season kicks off tonight. Bears versus Packers, the oldest rivalry in the NFL. It's a 7:20 kickoff on the lakefront, Soldier Field. That game will be televised on NBC nationally with Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth on the call. Channel 5 here in Chicago. Bears are 3-point favorites over the Packers coming off of their NFC North championship. Packers did not make the playoffs last year. But the Packers have a new head coach in Matt LaFleur, and it should be an interesting game. Looking forward to that one. Trey Burton's still a game-time decision. I imagine we'll find out later on this afternoon whether he is going to play or not. It was a good night for the Cubs, Chief, and they didn't even play. They had the night off, but they gained a half game on St. Louis. They also gained a half game on the Nationals, who lost. And they gained a half game on the Phillies, who are chasing them for the second wildcard spot, who lost as well. So the Cubs made progress throughout the evening as those three teams all lost. But the Cubs were off. They're in Milwaukee tonight as they begin a big four-game set against the Brewers up at formerly Wrigley North, but now the Brewers actually have some fans up at Miller Park, so I guess we'll have to call it Miller Park. White Sox lost in Cleveland 8-6. They'll wrap up that series this afternoon. Diamondbacks continue their chase for a wild card, playing really good ball of late. They're sneaking up on folks. They beat the Padres 4-1, and the Diamondbacks are now 73-67, 3 games behind the Cubs. They're now tied for the Phillies as they're chasing that second wild card spot. Chief.
Manny, when a few weeks ago, the longtime Packer, Jordy Nelson, who either traded or did something with him last year, he played for somebody else.
Raiders.
They signed him for 1 day to retire as a Packer. What does that do for you?
The Bears did that with Peanut Tillman, and you see that all the time. I don't know. They did it for Devin Hester too. I don't know if it does anything for you. It's just that's a team you played with for 90% of your career. That's where you had your best years. That's what you consider your team. And then, the last year or two of your career, you bounce around maybe as a backup at a few other places, and you want to come back and retire as you in your city. I don't know.
I mean, I guess it makes some kind of sense, but I don't understand why there's no like money attached to it. You're not like you're getting your check from the Bears instead of somebody else, your retirement check. I don't know. It just seems a little odd on that. But maybe everybody Lou knows. It just seems a little weird on that. But again, we've got this copper inching up here a little bit. But like I said yesterday, as was mentioned earlier, I listened to people with all this conviction. Hey Lou, what's up, buddy? How are you?
Hey man, I am sorry I'm late. I'm 8 time zones away again, and not paying attention. I was on another call with one of our potential customers, and didn't think about this, so my apologies.
I'm not going to ask what language they were speaking, so I'll just let that go. Hey, since you are a former agent, is when somebody gets signed for a day...
I just lost you, Chief.
I'm hearing you.
Okay, good. I just lost you for a second. Okay, right. Go ahead.
When somebody signs with the Bears or the Packers or somebody, like one day just to retire as a Packer or a Bear, is there anything substantive to that? I mean, it makes any difference?
It typically, no, it shouldn't make any difference. They sign a standard player contract. It doesn't count as a season earned because they're not on the roster for active games, enough active games. So it shouldn't make any difference in terms of wherever. The only thing it might affect, and this of course is not an NFL issue, it might affect where Canton wants to put them, you know, what team they come in with at Canton. But that, you know, the Pro Football Hall of Fame is not affiliated with the NFL. So that's a private organization. So that, you know, I can't imagine that would be anything other than the player's choice.
Well, I mean, if Jordy Nelson ever got in the Hall of Fame, there's no way the guy was not going in other than a Packer. You know, it was one year.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, it gets interesting because you have certain players that you know are fantastic with a couple of teams. And my father had a guy, Gary Zimmerman, who was an absolutely fantastic offensive tackle. And Gary played most of his career with the Broncos, but a sizable portion of it he played with the Vikings. And so when he went into the Hall of Fame, he went in as a Bronco, but, you know, he called my dad and talked to him about it and said, "Hey, look, I'm going to go as a Bronco, but, you know, I want you to know that you know, my time with you was crucial." And in fact, at my father's memorial service, he made a point of coming to the service. He traveled from Denver, where he lives, I think now, and made a point of coming back out to Minneapolis for the service.
Well, some superstars sort of inexplicably get traded halfway into their career. I mean, Frank Robinson was like that.
Well, Greg Maddux went in with a blank hat.
Yeah.
He refused to wear a Braves hat or a Cubs hat because he said they both meant so much to him that he couldn't pick. And he said, "I'm wearing a blank hat," and the Hall of Fame let him do it.
Yeah. So it's, but that's the only tangible effect that I could think you would see with a selection like that, with a guy signing for one day to retire with a particular team. Otherwise, it doesn't make any difference. As I said, it doesn't affect the earned seasons, which is the big, you know, is the big marker under the NFL contract.
Well, what your bosom buddy Jerry Jones was on CNBC yesterday. I was listening to him for about a half hour, and he was saying some stuff that I'm not accusing the guy of being a liar. It's his business. He said when he first bought into the Cowboys, he bought his first share out of a receivership somewhere. They were going broke before he bought majority interest or something. Were the Cowboys ever in like really, really? How could they be? They're
I mean,
they've always had this union contract.
We'll never know because that stuff is all privately held, with the exception of Green Bay. The only time I've ever heard of an NFL team going into receivership that I was publicly acknowledged was that situation with the Dolphins when the owner died and the estate, they had done such a bad job of estate planning that the estate taxes were so significant that the heirs had to sell the team, because otherwise they weren't going to be able to make the estate taxes. You know, the value was so high, they needed, I don't know what, $150 or $200 million in cash to pay the estate taxes, and they didn't have it. And so they had to sell the team. That's the only time I've ever heard of it.
Lou, I've always wondered how that worked. Down. Because when you have assets, and again, I don't begin to be an estate tax lawyer, but when you have assets, I asked my accountant, if you have stock, okay, if Lou bought, you know, 3,000 shares of IBM, I don't know when IBM was ever cheap, because even when I came to the trading floor, it was over 200, but that's many, many splits ago. Say you did buy IBM, I don't even know in the 50s if it traded 50 bucks, but say it did. You know, say you're 20 years older than you are. You bought these in your 50s. Now, after a million splits, The stock is 150. If you ship that to your kids, 1,000 shares apiece, they get a piggy move up on the basis. Their basis becomes the basis on the day you gave it to them. So on assets, that's the single biggest hole for when you talk about rich people. That's the single biggest hole in the tax law. Even if you took away the estate tax, which they essentially have done for a lot of people, they still get that amazing tax benefit that nobody else gets.
Yes.
But the interesting part,
what do they call it, an inter vivos transfer, I believe.
Yeah. But the interesting part is that also works for farms. It works for any asset. So I think what happens is if the farm was given to your number one son, say, and he kept it whole, that I don't think he has to pay. He gets the new basis on the farm as well. But somehow in there,
that's correct.
Somehow in there, if they have to sell it to distribute the stuff to other people, I don't know why there's now a tax on that sale. We have to get somebody on here as an expert on that, because clearly if they sell it, there seems to be issues on that if you distribute the money out. But I'm thinking once the person croaks and the money passes to the estate, you would think you could sell the farm then and distribute it off at the new basis, but somehow you can't. Or maybe something's wrong.
I think for tax purposes, if it's an inter vivos, a transfer given at life as a gift, I don't think that's a taxable event, and I think the basis does reset. It's been a long time since I've looked at this. Interestingly enough, it's funny you mentioned this farm setting, because I just finished this awful book called Blood Echoes, which is about a mass murder in Georgia in 1973. It's the Aldi murder, and I'm sure Maddie can find the book for Twitter purposes. Maybe that's the book I'll talk about this week. But in the book, it's a true crime story. It describes these bozos escaped guys out of a low security place in Maryland, going into Georgia, stumbling into this family trailer and murdering five of the six men in the family, and then murdering and raping, or raping and murdering, one of their wives. So they kill six people in a single family in a course of about 3 hours in an afternoon, and then are tried and one of them is put to death, and you know, a couple of the others are given life sentences. The farm transfer that happened, because these people in Georgia were all rural farmers, so the way the wills and everything had been set up by the original property owner, he was killed, and the land title would have passed to his sons. Well, all of his sons were murdered. The only and even the wife of one of the sons. So the way the killing cycle worked, it passed from, in the course of 2 hours, it passed through, I think, two or three people. But the wife was the last one left alive for about 2 hours, while they kidnapped her and then raped her and then murdered her. It's a horrific story. But because she was alive for 2 hours after the others had been murdered, all of the property passed to her. And all of the land passed out of the family from this family that had been there since the 1700s. The property all passed to this woman, who was then murdered, and then passed to her family, who had absolutely no connection with the property whatsoever.
I won't say fables either, but if you and your wife are in the same plane that goes down, that there was a, that one of you was judged to die first for legal purposes?
In some cases, yeah. Simultaneous death like that, there's a presumption in some states, and it's a state law issue, not a federal law issue. There's a presumption in some states that you know, one party died first in order to maximize the benefit to the heirs, you know, whoever the heirs are. You can get a presumption of that kind of death. The weird situation about this Blood Echoes case was that these two people didn't have any children. They had only been married a year or two, so they didn't have any kids, and there was nobody to, you know, that arguably would have kept the land in the family, but because there were no survivors.
Well, when Jerry Jones was talking about this yesterday, I was reminded of, and you and I got years ago, we talked about this, the biggest heads up I ever got regarding football finances. Now, again, this is when you were an agent, so you knew way more than me, was your buddy to coach. The last game, how long has the Baltimore team been there? 20 years? 25 years?
In when they moved from Cleveland?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think about 20 years.
Well, I remember this like it was yesterday because I always remember financial stuff. The last game, Mike Ditka went and was the color commentator. It was like the only one he did on the year. And I don't know why they picked him to do that, but he did. He was there with, I think he was with Tom Brenneman of all people, but they started talking about the finances and how could the guy go broke because he was bitching at the league, he was broke, blah, blah, blah. And Ditka, out of the blue, I never asked him back, says, hey, look, the check you get from, again, this is 20 years ago, and it's virtually the same now, I think. The check you get from, you know, CBS, NBC, I don't even know if Fox was alive in those days. He says the check you get from all your broadcasting people that every team gets, like the first day of the year, covers the entire salary cap.
That's correct.
So he said you have your live gate, your NFL properties, which at the time were like $4 million. You got your radio that you get, all your concessions, God knows what else you're doing. You get all that stuff just to cover the coaches, like training camp, and like insurance. He goes, the only way you can lose money in an NFL franchise is if you're gambling it away or doing something with it, and that's what this guy did. And I'm sitting there going, whoa, I can't believe somebody said that. Only the coach would have. He goes, you can't lose money in a football team.
Well, you know. That's basically correct, and that I think that is still correct in terms of the actual revenue structure. But I will say this: in the last year of the old collective bargaining agreement in 2011, the last year of that 2006, I believe it was, collective bargaining agreement, we got a look at Green Bay's finances because they're publicly held, and the Packers had a net profit that year of $4 million. In the last year of that CBA.
Okay.
So there were, still making money.
All right, Lou, no, you're gonna go at this like an attorney. And
I'm just saying they were still making money, but they weren't making very much money, and the movement had been down. That was a big reason why that 2011 CBA got rewritten.
Okay, but the Packers, and I'm gonna tread lightly here, the Packers, even though they're supposedly owned by charity, have a huge infrastructure. In our buddy Eric would say, they have quite the management class up there, making a lot of dough.
Oh, sure.
Now, the Bears at one point claimed they were making something. They had something like 11 McCaskies on the payroll. Now, do you count that, too, as profit? I would.
Well, I mean, I just go by what the public filings were.
But I'm saying...
The idea that you had an NFL team that was only making, that was only netting $4 million.
But I'm saying, if you and I are...
revenue was true. And oh, by the way, Chief, that thing about the TV contracts, that was true back in the 1980s.
Okay. So what is this part about Jerry Jones buying this thing out of receivership? I don't know how that... My point, Lewis,
they could have,
here's what...
One of the owners could have been getting ready to get bankrupt.
All right, where I'm going with this, and I know... I beat up on these points. The Packers were $4 million they were making. I'm going to say if I was doing the books and you and I were there, we each got a $2 million bonus, they were making $1. Okay, fine. I mean, does anybody think what about these banks? Does anybody, in these utilities? You look at the top 500 people at Commonwealth Edison, they're probably making 10 times what they should be making or competitively would be making. I mean, I might be a little harsh, but that's becoming the profit now. They don't care about shareholders. So what was the incentive for the Packers to show a profit?
I don't know. I mean, I'm just saying, their books are open to public scrutiny, and I haven't heard that charge made.
Okay, but what I'm saying is
everybody, or that they're hiding their profits among a large, a non-working group of people.
Okay, but I'm saying,
you'd be astounded at the size of the average NFL staff, especially compared to what I saw with the Vikings in the 1960s, 70s, and 80s.
Well, what I'm saying, you can make those numbers come out however you want, especially if you've got a big family.
Well, I mean, if you think they're padding the rosters with, or their personnel files with you know, bogus jobs, much like, you know, happens in Chicago.
Yeah.
I can understand that would be, you know, that would be worth looking at, but I haven't heard. I mean, as I said, their books are open. Well, I haven't heard anybody claim that they've been overpaying family members or management class members. They may have a lot of people. NFL clubs do.
Well, the joke on the trading floor always was that the McCaskies were $100,000 ball boys. You know, but again, I'm not going to impugn the. I'm just saying, take the numbers from the top. If all the salaries you hear about are covered, and you've got your how many games do you get at home? 10. You've got the radio on the BBM. You've got the NFL properties, which got to be up to what now? 10, 12 million on a crap you sell.
Listen. The NFL's not gonna win any points with me by claiming poverty. I'm just saying it's possible for one of those guys to be such a crappy money manager that his share or controlling share was in receivership because of this guy's other conduct or other investments.
Well, but Jerry Jones,
that wouldn't surprise me.
Well, Jerry Jones put the stadium down there, the way I understand it, because I toured it and I went and listened to the money part. It was supposed to cost $620 million. Now, he got a split on that from the area. All right, so the area came in with 300 and some. But Jerry kept going. And his own money, the thing is now up to over $1 billion with the bazillion TVs he put in and everything else. That pretty much is all on him. You know, so if all of a sudden Dallas as a city goes down a rat hole and he can't have concerts there and he can't have all that stuff because nobody shows up, he could seriously take a hit on that $700 million he put in a stadium.
I mean, it's the same thing. Yeah. It's the same thing with Snyder and FedEx Field. You know, the Redskins own their own stadium.
I mean, obviously you're going to get the gate, but still, I mean, you're paying a huge nut. I mean, if the thing's $1 billion, I mean, even if you got a 6% loan, they probably got some kind of TIF loan or some crap, but, you know, you're talking $60 million a year. It's a lot of dough.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean.
Oh, I know. No, well, and in fact, the collective bargaining agreement was restructured. We talked about this in 2011. The collective bargaining agreement in 2011 was restructured so that owners had incentives. They weren't, the players didn't get as much of the local revenue generated by the owners as they did off the TV and sort of league-wide revenue to incentivize the owners to do things locally to you know, improve fan performance and to make more money locally. So that, and by the way, Chicago played a factor in that because Jones and Snyder and the rest of them were screaming, why are we subsidizing the Chicago Bears? You know, we can sell the naming rights to our stadium and make money for us, but that goes into the common pot, and the Bears sit there and they're not taking advantage of their own economic leverage, and so why is our naming rights, a portion of our naming rights, going into the common NFL fund when you got teams like Chicago that aren't doing anything?
I'm going to say, Lou, that
Packers don't either. There's a handful of teams that don't.
But here's what I want for Matty Weber as he matures and his lovely bride. I want, actually not as an individual, because then
Chicago was the most obvious example, though, because we are an actual city as compared to Green Bay.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Well, but where I'm heading with this one is, what I want for you, Lou, someday when you're so wealthy you won't even talk to me, is to start defining losses as where you could have made more. That they're subsidizing Chicago, not because they ever send them a dollar, but because Chicago should be selling the naming rights for $5 million, and they should be getting 1/30th of that, and that they're not getting that check, so they're subsidizing you. That's where I want my life to get, where I'm not getting enough out of you, so I'm subsidizing you.
Yeah.
That's a big reach in Webster's Dictionary.
Yeah. By the way, Chief, Jerry Jones bought the Cowboys in 89 from H.R. Bum Bright for $140 million. It's claimed to be worth $4.2 billion right now. That's a pretty good investment. Apparently, Bright, when he sold the team to Jones, he was claiming to be losing $1 million per month on the franchise.
Well, he had.
How is that possible?
He had money coming out somewhere else, boy.
Yeah, $1 million a month on what?
That's a good question.
I mean, again, it's not like he has the option. Well, at that point, he did, though. At that point, he did have the option of spending money way out in front of other teams, because we didn't have the, you didn't have the hard salary cap. You had the, you know, the other stuff going on. But that's really interesting. I mean, it's possible.
He must have put someone,
but it was highly unusual.
Now, when Jerry bought it, did he buy the whole old stadium, or was that owned by the city?
I think that was Texas Stadium. I think was a public entity at that point.
So if the guy wasn't paying the nut in the stadium, how could he possibly lose $1 million a month? You could if you overspent on your stadium. You could, I think.
His payroll. He had people running his payroll who didn't understand, you know, basic football financing. He oversold advertising that never came through. He had bad incentive clauses in his commercial agreements with the stadium or with his vendors. And, now, I don't know how you go broke advertising or running a football team in Texas, you know, whether it's high school or college or pro, but it's possible to do.
I'd love to see the man's personal expense account. I'll bet you it would read like God knows what at the Cattlemen's Club with J.R. Ewing or someplace. You know?
Well, that happens. I mean, some of these guys, you know, they ran out. They're like rock stars. They ran out and bought private airplanes as fast as they could.
I hate it when those things go down in price. Lou, I have a question. I know you're not.
It's a real problem for me, too. Have you got some time for me to stick around?
Yes.
I feel like I cheated you for time.
Yeah.
I can stick around for a little while.
Yeah. Hey, I have a question for you regarding, you know, I don't know squat about insurance. We don't sell it here. Certainly casualty insurance. Lou, what happens? I just saw some pictures this morning of these marinas in Bahamas, and every one of the boats is on land. I mean, they just all got swept out of the water. If you have, I mean, what is your, if is your fault on? I mean, I know if you buy a boat and you get insurance and you go out in a lake and some idiot in a speedboat crashes into you and the thing sinks, your insurance is probably going to cover it. But if you've got, you know, 4 days warning on a hurricane, and you have every ability on earth to drive the damn thing to Florida in 6 hours, and you don't, and you just leave it there, are they going to write that check the next? I mean, I'm not saying everybody could have gotten out of there or whatever, but some people have more than one. I mean, I understand it, but is there some culpability on somebody's part that said, hey, you know that area floods, move your Lamborghini the hell out of there when you know it's going to rain for 4 days? I mean,
high value assets like that, there may well be riders written into the policy that say, in the event of whatever, you have an obligation to do this, and if you don't, then we're not going to pay. So, for example, in my neighborhood up in the mountains in Colorado, those of us who got fire insurance, our policies all contain riders that say, if a fire breaks out, the insurance company reserves the right to put teams on your property to take down trees and clear areas around the house to protect it from fire. And, you get similar kinds of, by the way, this actually happened also in California. So it's not unusual, I think, to see riders on policies for boats in areas like this where you're going to get a hurricane, for the insurer to say, we're not going to insure this, unless it was virtually, you know, the circumstances were impossible that you were unable to move the boat.
Yeah, but I just can't imagine these companies.
You know, your run-of-the-mill 15-footer, 20-footer, maybe not. But for, you know, a cabin cruiser, some big cabin cruiser or something like that, they would probably tell you, get it out of there.
Yeah, I mean, it's knowing insurance companies as I do, the thought of some guy showing up with his checkbook and writing, you know, $300 million checks and then getting back on the plane, I just somehow find it hard to believe. But, you know.
I looked at that devastation, and just looking at the street pattern there, it looks like there were a lot of vacation homes on at least one of those islands. And you know, the street pattern looked very suburban. And I was just thinking that, I, you know, somebody had a bunch of vacation homes up there that just got scoured by the hurricane.
So if you're a churchgoer, Lou, and not only does a hurricane come by your place, but it sits over you for like 4 days, you got to think that you're not doing so well praying to the big guy upstairs. And how could that even happen?
Well, you know, I don't know. That was what happened with Houston. That's why Houston got almost 50 inches of rain.
Yeah.
from, what was it, Henry?
Yeah.
You know, it just parked.
Now, did those guys, you know, I've kind of discussed this before. I mean, to try and get our people that run the government, you know, you and I could get down that rat hole, to try and get them to be competent, you know, to me is, I don't know why remember the Bourne Identity, did you ever, if you ever read the book or saw the original version with Richard Chamberlain, and where the guy says, why isn't public service a good thing to do with your life anymore, to give service to France and actually do a good job working for the government? And you wonder, you would think with this alleged climate change that virtually every place, Chicago included, somebody somewhere in the bowels of the county or the city, probably the county, has maps of Cook County for every storm, every flood, and how far it went, and they could tell you where the 100-year storm was and whatever. You wonder if anybody is going through all this stuff in California and the Mississippi Valley and everywhere and saying, we better add 10 or 15% to this. And these people that, you know, the flood never got to their house, we better add a block to this or something and actually have insurance, because most of these people don't have insurance. I mean, do you think anybody is doing anything intelligent like that? I mean, I can't believe that the 100-year storm now is the 100-year storm.
There's a real good article in City Journal that was written about 2 or 3 years ago by our friend Aaron Wren, the guy that we had on the show a couple of times, talking about Chicago specifically and how Chicago could go with respect to climate and the warming climate change and increasing moisture that's coming in. And it talked about the reconstruction of streets using, you know, materials that allowed water to permeate through rather than run off. And you know, freshwater traps and water runoff traps and water diversion mechanisms that actually worked, as opposed to were just, you know, ways of giving people phony baloney jobs like the massive tunnel system,
right?
Or deep tunnel system.
Hey, you got the guy in ambassadorship to Ireland. Come on.
Yeah, I know. So you look at. There's this kind of thinking is going on. I mean, urban planners are looking at this, and they're talking about in Chicago, for example. If you read this article, you'll see a whole line of options of things like more plantings, diverting the runoff water into liquid gardens that could hold the water with more plants, using more plantings around to soak up the moisture and streets that were permeable so that the water would soak into the ground as opposed to running off and filling overflowing storm drains. There are definitely options to that. Where you see it most applied most directly, though, Chief, is in insurance, because it's an economic issue.
Right.
So when I moved from Chicago to Colorado, I thought, okay, I'm out of Chicago. My insurance rates on my car are going to go down. Wrong. They actually went up slightly. You know why?
Because of hail.
Yep.
Before
Denver and Colorado Springs have been hit by some of the most massive hailstorms that damaged thousands of cars, or you know, like 3 or 4 years in a row.
Before Hurricane,
the insurance companies said, "Now we're not writing any more checks on this without a premium increase."
Which I was still trading on the floor in the '80s. I was still trading in the '90s, but the hurricane that whacked into Charleston, was that Hugo?
Yeah, that was the last one. This next one looks like it's going to hit it as well.
Well, before Hugo, I'm going to say the single biggest insurance event in this country was a massive hailstorm in Orlando where they had to fix or replace something like 300,000 cars, or some massive number of cars. It was a hailstorm. It was a bigger insurance event because they always fix your car.
Yeah.
When there's no, if it's a flood, they tell you, hey, you don't have flood insurance, but they always fix your car. Everybody's car is covered. Anyway, Lou, thank you very much, buddy. We'll talk next week. By the way, give Maddie your new email address, will you? Because there's something I want to ship you that I got from my Fed guys. I want to talk about it next week. It has to do with competition. SP Futures up 23, NASDAQ Futures up 84, but we're going straight to Fari. Just want everybody to know where we are. We were up 28 when we came in. Fari, how are you?
Good morning.
Well, you dodged
the hurricane. I'm doing better, but we roughed it out through Doria. I just put a picture up there for you.
You roughed it out. You didn't even get a sprinkle, did you?
Take a look at the pictures on Twitter. The picture's worth 1,000 words. Trying to save you some time.
Well, the picture I saw is the things in Carolina, and you're in Florida.
No, look at the... I just posted on my Twitter.
I don't do Twitter.
Well, your buddy Matt does.
Yes, he does.
Okay, he can show it to you.
Because
what?
Registered people have a real problem with Twitter.
You don't have to say anything. You can watch. There's no crime watching. If you say something, yes, I agree with you.
Yeah, it's an issue. But, how can I listen?
Anyhow, I put on the Socks and Jocks. I mean, I'm on my Twitter. You can look at it from the Socks and Jocks Twitter.
All right, so let me ask you this, though.
I should tell you, yes, those were my Calum 30s, and please do not look up the price. Don't embarrass me.
How does somebody watch the Twitter stuff all day and not have to say something somewhere?
Oh, I don't know. I get a chance to get my Twitter probably once a day after the close. During the day, I'm very limited. I got a couple of SourceNet directors. I just hired a new one. By the way, she's very cute. But these guys are very good at what I need to put out there. They cover me. I was sick in bed last 2 days, but I see some posts there. They know one thing that I approve, that I would okay. God forbid if they put something I don't approve.
Well,
no soup for you. Come back next year.
I'm watching the Notre Dame game the other night, and my buddies, they're now into this watching the game, and for some reason, football fans, not only if you're really one of these weirdo fans, I know Kevin's listening, not only you're always pissed at the perceived lack of respect that your team gets from the national announcers.
Okay.
This goes back hundreds of years, Matty. I remember on Monday Night Football, they never showed the Bears highlight film, so the city of Chicago hated Howard Cosell, even though he had nothing to do with what teams were on the highlight film. But they would never, of course, the Bears totally sucked in those eras, but they never made the Monday Night highlights in the Monday Night game. And the Monday Night game was a huge deal back then. And so they hated Howard Cosell because of that. Anyway, so my guys are all over Herb Street. And who's the other idiot? The other guy on Herb Street. And who's the other guy that does the college games? I don't know what his name is. So all they're doing is totally ragging on these guys. So finally, I had enough of it, and I sent the thing back. I go, why don't you idiots turn the radio on and turn the guys off? That way you don't have to worry. You can listen to the Notre Dame announcers. You should be happy. Why? But you know what? Maddie, entertainment, if people don't like the people, they listen more intently than if they like them, correct?
I think there's something to that, yeah.
I mean,
makes sense.
Because they can't not turn it off because they want to see how disrespected you really are.
Yeah.
Anyway, Fari, are we going to be up 25 points a day from now to the meeting in October, and then when the meeting doesn't do any good, we crash, or what are we doing here?
Well, we went long last night, but we were one day behind. The problem we had is we went flat on Friday with Time and Digest. Monday we were close. It didn't make sense to be long or short 3 days. We dropped on Tuesday, but it was a soft drop, and all of our indicators were neutral. They weren't high or low, and by protocol, I mean, it's not a mechanical system, but I tried to have a, I don't know, 15, 16-point checklist that's in front of me, making it almost as if it was mechanical. That says when you have a signal like that, wait one more day. Well, wait one more day was actually we went up yesterday. And now, you know, especially if you look at the queues trading this morning or in queues overnight in the stratosphere. As far as where we are on the charts in terms of timing, I would probably get cautious by Monday. So for now, I think path of resistance still today and tomorrow is up. Would I jump in a trade right now? That's what we've been debating. I mean, first of all, my head is still not super clear. I don't want to risk the flock, because once I say go, given the record, they don't even ask questions. They jump in. That's the problem. That's scary. If I said jump, we're going to jump. And again, I'm ranked one in the country as of Wednesday. And so I've got to watch out my, you know, my own self first. And, you know, call it properly. We don't like to pay the state over the weekend. I'm debating should we do something here or not. This is for the option, guys. For future, guys, first, it's a lot more liquid. B, you can also get out in the evenings. With option, guys, you get stuck if something goes wrong. With this crazy market, this moves back and forth we've had, one crazy move by Grampino, we're in trouble after hours and they can't get out. So that's the debate. But Well, I'm speaking to you. My thoughts are coming up. I think he has learned enough not to meddle with the news and stay away. We hope on the market stuff. I think probably would come after him. What's his name? Goldman Sachs would come after him. Both of those who are inside the White House and those outside are at Goldman. Here you go. We're at 50 bar right now. Last night, with the move up, now we're above it. My alarms will go off around 3,000, 2990 to be exact. 2990 to be exact. We're up 25 right now, 37 there. That's 70. Let's see. 67. So we're at 62 right now. Hoping we'll be around, estimate of when we'll be 2962. I would, it's above 2 sigma. Yeah, it's getting tired. I would think most likely, unless we have additional news, by tomorrow, he'll be exhausted, this move.
I have a question. As we've seen, we've talked about, and I've talked about a lot when you weren't here, but I about more when you are here. There's sort of like a tale of several markets here. And the, if you were with the high tech stuff, you've had a pretty spectacular last few months. Right. If you're with the Russell, you've had a crap year. I mean, the thing is nothing but go straight down. God help you if you're any of the oil stocks. I mean, thank God I've got my puts on the XLE for the people I have in there. Because we've managed to hang in there. But
it's finance.
But any of these other stocks that, the Grumpino supposedly was going to help, the U.S. Steels, the Freeports, the Chesapeake Energy, those things have been absolutely down the bleep hole. U.S. Steel was like going to go under $10. All of a sudden yesterday, little bit of a hint, a whisper of a little bounce in the copper, little bounce in some of the steel stocks, little bounce in the Russell, which seems to be coming through again today. I don't think it means a huge rally in the market, but I think it might mean a little rotation is coming. That maybe you can actually buy.
Let me give you some levels to watch. 10,245. Okay, 10,245 on. No, I'm sorry. 10,243 on transportation, and 15,15 seems like it's been sitting there. We talked about it last week, I think. On Russell, these are daily charts. If we do not get above that, set up for a death cross.
I'm not
50 dropping through 200.
I'm not throwing this trade out there, but I'm saying I almost wonder if it's the point here because I have people, a lot of money in both of these two positions, the Russell and the QQQs, and I've managed to hang in there on the one and made good dough on the other. I'm wondering if I had a trade like this, which I don't, never will, and don't do it, please. I would almost go long Russell, short Qs here.
Long Russell, short Qs.
I'm thinking we might be starting to see a little bit of reverse of what's seen
could
in the last few months.
Our work shows that we should have a downdraft late September, okay? Right now, we're not setting for that. I may be wrong. But timing, time cycle versus price cycle are two different animals. Our work shows that we should be expecting a pull down in late September. Maybe it's going to be in October. I don't know. Right now, the chart pattern, the price action, doesn't support that. In the pure indices, I'm talking about SPX, NDX. If you go back into Russell and Trans, which have a forward-looking eye out there, especially Russell, it says, hold on to that thought, it may come. We get a death cross on any of these two, the other one should come quickly, and then the rest of the market would unravel.
Well, I guess...
And if you look at the weekly chart...
Let me put it another way, Farry.
Sure.
These other areas that are so important to our quote economy, not our stock market,
right?
The steel industry, the oil industry, the small caps, where everybody in the world, if you say, can we have a big rally? Can we have an economy that busts out of the doldrums, which it's still in, despite what people say? Can we do it without those industries? Can we do it without the Russell? I'm going to say the answer is no. So
I agree. 100% agree.
What I'm saying is. I'm almost
a day or two could be off, but not on a longer time frame.
Right. So I'm almost saying
catch up, it will be avalanche coming.
I'm saying if if we don't, if U.S. Steel isn't a good buy at $10, we got a problem. I mean, now granted, those guys have, I understand from my architectural buddy, he gave me a long lecture on this, I saw him a few weeks ago, that one of the problems U.S. Steel has is that there's a huge advancements of using these recycled materials.
Right.
And you can only do those in the electric arc furnaces. You can't throw recycle. I mean, I don't know the technology, but it's more difficult to throw recycle.
So they're ready for the last war.
Well, yeah, but he says, you know, I said, well, what can you use that recycled stuff for? He goes, what are you talking about? Iron ore isn't pure.
Yes.
You take iron ore and you make stuff that you build bridges with. You can take recycled stuff, you analyze it, you realize if it's pure or not pure, add stuff to it, pull stuff out of it.
It's almost different with it.
You can do whatever you want with it.
And they may not be tooled up for that because U.S. Steel came back with the old, furnaces. They refired up old plants that were mothballed, right?
Yeah, but you now it's all. I won't say it's all, but a lot. He goes. Everything, all these bridge stuff you're seeing on the Dan Ryan here. He goes, all that stuff. The Merlin Interchange, that's all recycled.
Yeah.
Because it's structural steel. It's good stuff. It's as good as the stuff they used to make the, maybe even better. And
where I came from, the only thing that wasn't recycled. No, I'm saying the things that had to be non-recycled were fatigue stuff, especially in aluminum. We could not use. You couldn't melt the aluminum, let's say, from pots and pans and build aircraft.
Right.
No, it has to be pure.
Well, it's a different grade, yeah.
Because the issue is also fatigue, and that we cannot mess around with. You just don't know. And the risk is too much, so you pay a little bit extra.
Well, what I'm saying is we either are going to get some kind of a rotation here, because I don't see these basic industries, and I'm not saying it might not be steel, but the entire steel industry is not going to zero, and the oil industry going to zero, and all these other places, and somehow the stock market is still, 3,500 or something, and it's boost.
Same thing with the small caps. They're not going to go to zero either. But they're good leading indicators, look at, the thing I'm worried about is that there was a chart on, I don't know, I got to find it. I'm watching a lot of TV because I had this cold. But there was a chart on CEO optimism as a survey as an indication for CapEx spending versus retail consumer confidence to predict retail activity and you overimpose that over recession times. CEO confidence always seems to be spot on or just lead right before it. The problem I see is that given what we're going to see in the trade war here, unless that's mitigated quickly, I know there was a tweet last night from or early this morning.
It was supposedly a meeting scheduled for October.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, that of course, he's catching that. He probably saw the same channel we were seeing for analytical work, and I doubt it, but we'll see. And so they tweet these things out, or they talk to the other side, please put something out, let's talk, or initiate a call to make a call, what have you. But the uncertainty around this trade war is really having impact on CapEx, and you're seeing it in copper prices. Copper is a very good indicator of CapEx work moving forward. And you see that. Look, the BLS last week, their own BLS shaved off 500,000 for the last 12 months ending, of new jobs, ending in March. So we don't have from March to here, it's too early. And I know Kevin sent a note out saying they do it every year. Yes, correct. And sometimes it's positive. These corrections are, you're getting finer data and compiling it and putting it out. And sometimes it goes up. It doesn't always go up.
Well,
down.
Sorry.
We haven't gone down, but we didn't have 500,000 corrections.
Deep in the bottom.
Pardon me?
What happens, I believe, and this is a layman's view, when you look at, there's the household survey and there's the establishment survey.
Right.
Okay, now, if Chief and Fari and Matty Weber will bring him with, even though he's not the most handy guy with a hammer and a nail, we'll bring him with anyway, because he's good looking and he talks to people well. Say we start building houses, all right, because we have nothing better to do, right? We start building houses and all of a sudden we've got 5 electricians working and 3 plumbers and we got a bunch of carpenters and we got laborers. We got 50 people there. And now it's October and we're growing fast. nobody knows that those people are working because they're 1099 employees. Okay. Now, if they happen to get caught in a household server where you call their house and the wife says, yeah, my husband's a carpenter and he hasn't had a job for 2 years. And by the way, now he's working with Chief Infari and Mad Enterprises and he's been working every day for the last 3 months and things are good for us. Now, you might get that phone call, but you probably won't, right? I mean, so it's somebody's job to try and anticipate. And this is what, I mean, you hear me say all the time, that when the economy is really growing, that's why I've really never thought this one was growing that much. When the economy is really growing, it's actually doing a lot better than the numbers indicate, because all these people that are, I won't say cash anymore, but you're paying them by check, they're 1099 employees, you really don't find out about them until January when they send in their estimated tax, right?
Right.
So somebody has to judge whether the economy is expanding that whole area. There's like all kinds of these people. Or if the economy is going crummy, Chief and Fari and Maddie Enterprises go, well, we just built our last house, let's lay everybody up. And we do that next April. Nobody's going to know about that until next January again, right?
Right.
So there's somebody
you need to find a tooth comb.
Well, somebody has to
through the data
and
adjusting numbers correctly.
Somebody has to make the determination.
A finer correction, I should say. I mean, finer value.
But there's
this is the error in observation. It's epsilon, right? The epsilon will never go to zero. It's error in observation. You're just reducing it. That's all.
Well, but somebody's job is to estimate the people you're not counting. Are they more of them working or less? And what happens is they basically bleep up. They say, okay, we thought a half million people were working, and we added them to the numbers, and guess what? They're not there. Because if you look at the numbers on the year, and we'll have Carl on tomorrow, with all the 250,000 this month and 100,000 next month, and we had a 75, if you look at December 31st last year versus the end of, we'll get the August numbers tomorrow, the end of July, so 7 months, there's 300,000 more people employed, versus God knows how many that they told us about, and then they took the 500,000 out. But there's actually 300,000 more people employed. There's 300,000 people less in the unemployed column, and there's 300,000 people more, and they're not working, but we don't know what the hell they're doing. So it's been an amazingly quiet year in the labor market if you look at the 7 month numbers, but nobody does it. If you're bullish, you go, God, look at the jobs. It's unbelievable how many jobs we got. Or somebody else goes, well, I don't know. We had that 75. The fact is, nobody looks at the numbers and actually tells you the straight story. And I don't understand why, Fari. You listen to news for 24 hours a day, you never get a fact.
The hourly work, also, average work week is not increasing.
No.
And the extra pay is not there. It's just something is off here. The other thing is that, hey, we still have these huge deficits. If the economy was good, given the tax credit, relief that the Trump gave, you would be at 4%. Listen, if we're at 4%, let me put it the other way. If that trickle-down theory this time worked, we would be at 4%, rather than buybacks, right? Actually, money was taken, put into like the money that they brought in from overseas, put into plants and PP&E equipment and people, and then it's hired people. We would be at 4% GDP. If we were at 4% GDP, we would have a lot less deficits.
Well,
I'm not saying zero deficit; that we're far from that, but not a trillion plus run rate right now each year. Something is off here.
It's
not going to work. Something's going to stop.
If you told people the truth. Or emphasize the Sue. I must have heard 15 people yesterday talk about how consumers is in such spectacular shape last month because retail sales was up 0.6%. Income was up 0.1. So 0.5% went on a credit card. Is that good or bad? I don't even know. You and I are of an age, we might say that's not so good. Other people say the consumer's confident in the future and he's willing to take on more debt. I don't know if that's positive or negative.
I think we're at the late cycle. I wouldn't be too impressed by consumers. Confidence. I'm more worried about what CEOs are thinking. Again, to me, CapEx is everything because that's a long-term decision, not the impulse buying at Macy's.
And when are you going to impulse buy that huge yacht so Manny and I come down?
What makes you assume that I don't have one already?
Well, you think he'd hold on?
You haven't been invited. I know. Well, you're not the only one who's complaining.
Oh, all right. Well, have a good week, buddy. SP Futures up 26.50. NASDAQ futures up 91. We'll have Mr. David Andelman back in about 1 minute.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's john@PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right
now. Hello, everyone. Play Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Holly, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP futures are up 26.50. NASDAQ futures up 90. Dow futures up 251. So we've got 2 days in a row to the upside here after one day down on Tuesday. So we've got the China and U.S. agreeing, evidently, to meet in October for trade negotiations. I'm sure we'll see that off and on again a few times, maybe, but maybe it's time for sure. DAX up 95.8%, FTSE down 49.7%, as our man over there, Boris, has got nothing but trouble with the Parliament. He tried to find a way where they weren't going to be in session. They sure did a lot the 2 days they were here. And they voted against him like a couple of times, and now there are ways to do it. Maybe he may have to call another general election, which would be a real pain. French up all percent, 54 bucks over in Asia. We've got Nikkei, which has been schlumping. It's up 436, and that's 2%. Shanghai up 28.1%. That's a full 1%. Hang Seng down 7 because they were up 400 some points yesterday. So they were up enough yesterday where they're not today. These bands, 152. We've come back over 150. And, you know, it's a pretty good move in, you know, 3 days. We're 1.49 2 days ago. The Bund is minus 0.61. These guys are down. They were minus 0.79 the other day. So they're, it's a reasonable move to the positive, even though it's still negative. Japan, down 0.26. I'm not sure that the 30-year, with the 10-year at minus 0.61, I don't know if Germany went out with a 30-year today, it would be negative. Remember last week they came out and the 30-year was slightly negative. I don't know if it would be now if this is back a little bit. Oil, not doing much, up 9 cents, 56.35. Brent up 23, 60.93. Gold coming back finally a little bit, 13 bucks, 15.47. Silver down 19 cents, 19.35. They've been going up every single day and have come back a little bit now with 2 days in the market going up. So a lot of news today. Maddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We have a crash already on the Jane Addams Tollway inbound just before the Fox River Bridge. That's closing the right lane. It's blocked with debris, so solid traffic out near Elgin, northwest suburbs, on I-90, the Jane Addams, so keep that in mind. As you come in further inbound, traffic builds on the Kennedy. We had an earlier crash at Cumberland. That's all clear, but some resulting congestion from that that's affecting both the inbound Kennedy and the Edens as you get further inbound. Earlier crash on the Eisenhower at Wolf Road is all clear, but 290 is relatively backed up, as it usually is this time of morning. Same for the Stevenson. Southside expressways are looking okay. Off the expressways, it looks like on the north side, Elston Avenue is closed between Roscoe and Addison due to a crash. So keep that in mind if you're traveling out in that area. Downtown Dearborn, at Madison, right by my building, actually. I wonder if this is my building, because a car went into a building at Dearborn and Madison.
You think they got your desk?
Well, I'm on the fourth floor right now, so I doubt it. But that's causing some confusion as folks are navigating around downtown, so keep that in mind. And then it looks like on the south side, 79th between Columbus Avenue and South Albany is closed because of a diesel spill after a semi crashed. A level one hazmat response has 79th Street closed on the south side. One other issue to report out in Hanover Park, Irving Park and Barrington Road. There's a three-car crash with injuries out in Hanover Park that has Irving Park at Barrington Road completely blocked right now, and that's causing significant issues as crews work to get that situation resolved. Everything else looking okay out there. Weather today should be very nice football weather for the NFL opener tonight. Partly cloudy skies, a high of 71, should be dry. Right now it's mostly cloudy and 62 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 108 today. Right now it's mostly clear and 90. In sports, the NFL 2019 campaign kicks off tonight at Soldier Field, Bears versus Packers. That's a 7:20 Central Time kickoff. The game will be televised on NBC5 locally and NBC nationally. Bears are 3-point favorites over Green Bay at home tonight, so the boys in Vegas think it's an even game. Home team always gets 3 points. Trey Burton is a game-time decision, current Bear tight end, who was really good for the most part last year and then got hurt at the end of the season, really hurt them not being in the playoffs, and he's battling issues with his groin. So he's a game-time decision. We'll find out later on today. Cubs were off last night there at Milwaukee, gained a half game on St. Louis. White Sox lost to the Indians 8-6. Diamondbacks over the Padres 4-1. Chief.
Is the... Have they given up on the Thursday night being the Pro Football Network? It wasn't televised. Is it going to be NBC all year?
I don't think it's NBC all year. I think it's CBS. But the season opener, NBC gets.
Really? How'd that work?
They negotiate it in their contract.
So the idea that if you don't have cable, you can't get the Thursday game, that's going the way of the Dodo Bird?
Well, yeah. I mean, half the games were NFL Network, half were CBS. I think that was the most recent contract for the Thursday night.
For a while, if the Bears were playing and it was a Thursday night game and locally they'd put it on Channel 7, which is ABC.
Yeah, I think they still probably do that locally.
Anyway, David, how are you?
I'm doing fine.
I just saw these private payroll numbers grew by 195,000 in August. How these numbers are so high, and yet you look at the totals at the end of 7 months and they're, get a load of this, out of the 195,000, 100,000 new jobs came in education and health service. And those are the ones we can't quite get into the CPI, can we, David?
Hey, it's just 12 items. People live in 12 items, right?
Yeah, so half of the people hired this month are in two fields that, if you add them up in the CPI, are 11% of the economy.
And they don't eat beef.
Yeah. Either people don't look into the detail and probably are happier in their life than we are, David. They don't look into the detail, or they really choose to ignore it. They're all part of some massive conspiracy to keep the truth. You can't handle it from people. So how are you? I was noticing the last couple of days, I want to run it by you. The stocks that have absolutely been crapple, the steel stocks, the oil stocks, some of the copper stocks like the Freeport and those things, they absolutely cannot get out of their own way. And Russell, too, all of a sudden in the last day or two are showing a little life. So this two-day rally is a little more interesting to me than just, another scheduled China thing. Because I'm seeing some life in those areas, or I'm seeing a little rotation where somebody might want to, you might want to sell Qs, buy Russell or something crazy like that, which I wouldn't do, by the way. But, you wonder if the XLE is going to get a little bit of a kick here or something. I don't know.
You called the bottom. I mean, you really did. I'm not just giving you credit in natural gas. I mean, you basically said when you had front month below $2, something had to happen. And, I mean, literally in a week and a half, you have November contract, now the most active, at 250.
Yeah, yeah.
The last eight trading sessions has been straight up.
Yeah, I think that one was a... I can't say it was a gimme, David, because I'm not about to have any...
That's
from any
a
money.
Big contract. You should be retired by now.
Yeah, except what am I going to do? Call my clients and say we're shifting like $100,000 over to the Burke for a one lot?
No, but you could have shifted yours.
Yeah, that's truth. But
hey, better than the 0.1% they're paying you at the bank.
Well, that's... Yeah, the winners are always, I was listening to the guys yesterday doing a roundtable, and everybody, of course, this section's been up 5% in the last 4 months. That's where you got to be. Well, no kidding. Going back, I guess I should have bet who the hell the Cardinals play last night. I should have bet them last night. Duh.
San Francisco.
Yeah. Hey, why did you know San Francisco was going to win? Well, it's easy to know now. Anyway, so, we just mentioned it to Fari, David, that I don't think that the market, if people are going to say we're going to rally off from here, and some people are, I don't see how we rally off from here without the stocks that have been getting annihilated in the last 2 months. There has to be a little bit of turn in the Russell. There's got to be some kind of turn in the oil. They're just too big a segments of the banks, too. They're just too big a segments of the economy for us to leave without them. Totally. Not that they're ever going to...
No, I agree. And for once, the market pundits, are pointing out, watch KRE, the ETF on regional banks, because, supposedly their balance sheets are good, but, there's worries as far as, ability to make the spread, because of low interest rates, and who knows, maybe, I have a very, very tiny position, covered calls for full disclosure, but I'm not touting it at all. Very tiny position, but that's an area, if nothing else, to watch for direction. And like you said, the laggards. I mean I had a little bit, but that was a brilliant call in the NG.
Well, I have this. I have a couple of clients, David, at one of the places where I'm managing some dough for, and there's this outfit called Caldera, CLDR. And these guys are. Well, the client said to me, look, why don't you find three or four people in the cloud area, and I don't know that much about the cloud area, and I want to invest in those individual companies and that kind of an index. And, the indexing stuff is what I'm good at. So I spend all kinds of time trying to find, and I ask a few other people.
IGV.
You like that one?
IGV is an ETF that is, it's not totally cloud, but it's dominated. Now, it is over $200 a share, but the options are rich. There's plays there. Again, in full disclosure, I do have a tiny position. And being frank, we're down some money in it, but that's an area where you can get good diversification. Over the long, long haul, it's been a good plus alpha performer, and the options are rich.
Well, this particular one, I picked four. So I picked, I think I had Intel, I had Microsoft, I had something else. Then, but this one, as I went through on the internet, of course, everything on the internet is correct, right? I must have had I must have had 15 pundits picking their top five, top eight, top 10 cloud stocks. Every single one. Every one of these guys had this thing in the top five. And one of them had this thing where there were squares, right? And the squares were, here's one that nobody ever heard of and nobody wants to hear of, or something like that. You know, here's one that somebody's heard about. Anyway, it was like the only one that was in the square where everybody was convinced it was going right to the moon, right?
Yeah.
So, but still.
They beat it up big time.
Yeah, so still, I don't do anything without, every buyer is a seller, right? So I'm always trying to insure everything. So, of course, I think I buy it for this guy at like $15. And we buy the puts. And the only thing was, he's mad at me because I didn't buy more of it. And I said, I don't trust this company. Even all these guys that are... So we put, some number in it. It was probably two-thirds of what he wanted to put in it. And I buy the puts. And I said, look, I think we got enough. And so the stock immediately goes from 15 to like 5. Now, out of the $10 the stock's down, I'm going to say we made 5.5, 6 on the puts, not the whole way. So right. We're down, and of course now we sell a couple of calls, but they're not getting much for the calls. So starting to creep up to where it's like $6, $6.25. But it's starting to look like it has a shred of life in it, like it has a pulse.
There's been some.
Yeah.
I don't own any. John's been talking about some big call buying the last few days.
Well, the earnings were last night. We did an earnings play. Now the stock's $8. So, another dollar, I could actually be up in this because I made some money on the puts. But
you're
starting to see a little, the Freeport, the copper stock, which you didn't want to be sitting below because it would land on your head. All of a sudden, it had a little bit of a goose yesterday. The XLE is up a couple of days in a row. I mean, I'm not.
Well,
we
talked Tuesday about copper, and it was within a half a cent of breaking below 245, which would have targeted to 190 to 190, and it held, and it's rallied 15 cents.
Yeah, and that's why I'm kind of searching.
It held technically the perfect spot, and that you can't say that often.
No, and that's why I'm kind of looking around now for some of these laggards, where even if I get my people in them a little bit, maybe if the rest of the market turns around and comes down a little bit, I won't get hurt so much. I don't know how much lower they're going to go. I mean, no matter what happens to the economy, I still think natural gas is going to, 280 at some point during the winter, unless we have a spring-like winter.
All right, well, there's half the move left for you to retire on.
I already missed half of it.
When you were calling it, it reminds me of that Apple Amazon call you called a few years ago, and the spread moved to $100. That was one retirement play. This was one you couldn't find a bull if you searched the whole world.
Well, that's why I did. What I was talking earlier, David, I want to repeat a little bit here, is I'm saying I know people think it's goofy when I go back to, 1980s and 1970s, but the mentality is the same even though it was exact opposite. I mean, the interest rates were so high, and you'd sit there and say, why would anybody buy a stock, even if the stock is returning a 7-8% dividend when I can go to the bank and get 15 or 14 or 13.
Right.
It really was quote like an idiot play. But the thing of it was is, are we going to stay like this? And if a company really is that healthy, or as crappy as everything is, they're still sending you a check for $2.50 a share. If all of a sudden things turn a little bit, the interest rates are going to come down and this thing has to go up. There has to be some sort of we were at such an edge that I don't think anybody felt that we could stay at 14% interest in CDs for much longer because companies were paying that much and they were going out of business and without the economy going basically down in the crap hole. And so it almost had to change. And you looked at, was it a better move today to put money into these stocks than it was cash? Well, the answer for 3 or 4 years was no. And all of a sudden, one day, the answer was yes. Now, here, we're the other way. I mean, we're pushing these interest rates down to somewhere to where these companies, if somebody's sending you a $2.50 check a year, it's worth God knows how much it's worth because you can't get anything at a bank, right? So, I mean, it's such the end of the capital asset pricing model that you can't even really value it. And yet people keep saying, if the interest rates go down, you got to treat it like they're 6% going to 5. And no, David, I don't think you can treat them that way, just like you couldn't in 81. You would never have bought that stock, and yet that was the trade, to cash out your 14% at the Continental Bank and go buy these stocks in August of 82. And yet it was not obvious that it was going to be that much. I'm saying somewhere here, if they keep running these rates lower because the economy, quote, sucks, and the other people around the world are doing it because their economy sucks even more, I mean, somewhere along the line here, it's going to be the trade to sell the market at some high level and put it in cash, because cash can only go the other way at some point. I mean, I'm not saying we're there yet. I'm not
well,
a good timer.
Well, yeah, and then, I mean, somebody pointed out today, and I've been thinking about it for a while. You know, in 87, when you had, you know, whatever, T-bills at, you know, 8% and S&P about 1.5% yield, you know, everyone was leaving all that safe money on the table to own stocks, and of course the market crashed. Now, there was a commentator today that says everyone's buying bonds now for capital appreciation and stocks for yield.
Yeah, well,
because the yield on S&P and Dow is higher than a 30-year bond.
People,
so I mean, that's got to change.
Well, people think that stocks are risky. I've taken all my tests and I did all my rehabs on all my tests. You're not supposed to tell people that bonds are riskier than stock. Okay, so I won't say that. So whatever I just said, strike. However, you'll never see a move in anything, except maybe the crash of 87, if all of a sudden these interest rates start going the other way and the long-term rate, instead of being 2, is going to be 4. These bonds will collapse like no stock you've ever seen.
No question.
And how is it, David, that the risk is there? I mean, nobody's, I don't think, telling people to put their money in bonds. Although, I will say this. That I have I'll ask you on the
Well, end. I bet in Europe they are.
I have a question.
When they have negative and positive here, they'll reach for anything.
Well, right there.
Maybe not here, but I guarantee abroad they are.
Well, there, to me, again, I haven't been there in a while, it's all about the guy on the white horse, Draghi, coming, he's going to buy them from you higher. There isn't a person on earth that is, I think, I pity the fool, that is going to give somebody.
I mean, somebody, when you're almost negative one in Germany, and you see, you know, even 1.5 in a 10-year here, you better believe that the 1.5 is going to look real attractive. Just pay up.
Well,
and I am certainly not touting that.
Let me ask you this. Just like I spotted in the copper and in the natural gas, the German 10-year got to, I'm going to go back and get this so I can be exact here. The German 10-year, I think, last Friday or last Thursday, because I've been given that number every morning now, got to -0.79.
Yeah, I think I saw -0.92. I think.
Well, okay, well, it's come back pretty strong the last few days, and we're 0.61.
Right.
I wonder, same way with Japan. It got to -0.299. Now it's 0.26, and we're back over 1.5. I think we've seen the bottom there too. I don't think the German.
I hope you're right.
I mean, this is a fairly big move in 3 days, -0.79 to -0.61.
And especially if, I'm almost sure that they, an interday quote, it may have been for 30 seconds, I'm almost sure I saw -0.92.
Well, then it's back 30 basis points.
Right.
Which is a lot in a week.
That's a lot.
So, I mean, I could be totally wrong and next week, but I wonder if we didn't, they had that 30-year auction last week that actually went out slightly negative. I think with the 10-year here, at the 30-year, if you did it again today, it probably would be even. I don't know if it'd be negative.
Right.
I mean, it's just such a bad idea. And I honestly think, David, at the end of the day, if policy totally lacks any sort of common sense, it's bad policy. I just, you know, I think it.
I agree with you.
But it could be your policy to put, you know, whatever. What do they call the temporary bathrooms in the middle of the street? But it's just bad policy. Right? Whatever the porta potties, you don't want them in the middle of the street. It might be your policy, but it's not a good idea. Yeah. It's just. Yeah, especially get some wild driver over the place. Anyway,
David Parks writes in on Twitter, a 30-year treasury at 2.5% can wipe out your annual income in one day with a 10 basis point increase.
Yes. That's right. Yeah, I mean, and I don't think people put these models in there. I mean, you know, David, when I started, I'm going to say the 30-year bond, and David Parks, I don't think he's old enough. There's always one bond, right? That's the bond that you trade, right, David?
Right.
And at the time, Maddie, it was 8.5%. I was a member of the Board of Trade at the time, and when you went to deliver bonds, they used to send you in the mail to my house, of all places, not even, you know, where I was a market maker. I'd get this thing in the mail, and it'd be like 10 pages thick, David, where if you didn't have that particular bond and wanted to deliver another bond, you could deliver like $101 of the other bond or $99 worth of the other bond.
It's written into the contract.
It's written in the contract. There was a million different, Matt, you even understand what I'm talking about? Because nobody had that bond. But if you wanted to deliver a bond, you could deliver a like bond, maybe one for the next year or a year before, but you had to give a slightly more or less than the one. But anyway, this thing is 8.5%. And Matt, guess where it's trading? I'm thinking the low was 67, David?
Right.
Which put it at, well, it's a third over 8.5. So it tapped out at 12.5%.
I think the par bond was like 6.5 or something.
Yeah. It tapped out.
Something like that.
The 30-year rate was 12.5%.
Right.
When the short-term rate was 15. Right. And inflation was, what, 11? Something like that. You always were able to earn more than inflation, which was interesting compared to this time. for savers, that era was much easier on savers, people that had money, than now. This is decimation for anybody who's a saver. A saver has not been lucky enough to have been in the market. If you're just a saver, you've been decimated. Where back in the 70s and 80s, the savers made out pretty good. Right, David?
But like I pointed out, you know, I am seeing stuff where, you know, if you maintain, you know, $15,000 in an account or whatever, that these banks are saying, and not in a CD where you're tied up. I'm starting to see 1.8 and 2, which is amazing to me.
I think you were starting to see that 6 months ago, and with this last dash down, it's all gone away.
No. I got cards in the mail yesterday.
Okay. Well, maybe
Wintrust, and I don't have any accounts. I'm not doubting them. Don't work for them. Wintrust and the like. There's stuff available. Even Chase.
Okay. Well, maybe
I think they will disappear.
You know what? You know
they're still there.
You know what? I honestly think, David, that marketing campaign was 3 months in the making, and by the time they sent them out, I think if they had any brains at Chase, they'd pull all those letters back.
I agree with you. They put so much into the marketing, and they're stuck until it's over.
Yeah, I think they are, because I mean right now, I mean look at where the we were getting at PTI. We were going to the auction for some of our clients. I'm going to say, you know, I could yell out to Dan, but I'm going to say 4 months ago we were getting 2.6. Now it's 1.6.
Right.
It was 4 months ago. Right. And, you know, it's but David here I got to ask you. This is the only person left on earth that's old enough to even know what this is.
Uh-oh.
I went to the weekly money supply thing, and I've been watching this now like a hawk for a while. I mean, sometimes I look at, why exactly are we up to 9.1 increase in M1? What are we doing? What are these guys doing?
Adding liquidity to cushion slowdown, I guess. You would know that far better than I would.
But I mean, even at the depths of the crash, 2008, the number got to like 7 or 8.
I don't have any idea. Try and weaken the dollar. I don't know.
I mean, whatever it is, that's the reason why these rates are going down like this. I mean, and everybody, and I'm sorry for all the guys who are on CNBC because some of them are my friends, they keep talking about, will the Fed lower rates or do this? David, these are the numbers that count. How much money are you putting
in? I remember the ages ago where, you know, M2, M3, M1, they'd sit there at Thursday at 2 o'clock, and that would be the number.
Yeah.
Nobody even cared about employment.
No. But I'm curious, the fact that these guys are going to lower by a quarter point next week or the week after, whenever they meet, it's a fait accompli, because you look at this number, of course it's going down. You're pouring money into the system, and what do you think you're doing?
Right.
I mean, it's crazy. So, David, is there a spot here we want to be a seller, or no? Are we going to let this ride?
Only under front month future below 2950 S&P, below 7785 in NASDAQ. Otherwise, it's a breakout that you have to respect.
All right, buddy. S&P futures up 27, NASDAQ futures up 90. We'll see if this holds. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.